Blog Talk Radio.
Dennis, what's going on, boss? How you doing?
This week I'm boss, huh? All right. Well, if I'm boss, I want these windows cleaned. Get this floor swept up. This is a disaster. What is wrong with you? The studio looks like crap. Would you have a wild party in here? What's all these beer cans? Hey. I'm probably the one that messed it up. Never mind. Going good, brother. Going good. Just another beautiful day in the neighborhood. How's life treating you today, sir?
Not too bad, not too bad. How was your weekend?
Well, about 50% shorter than I would like to see them. Somebody needs to institute the four-day weekend, the two-day recovery, and the one-day work week, and I think I'd be in good shape then. So, yeah, that's pretty much, that was my weekend. But I'm going to call her in, so give me a moment. Let me go screen this one. I'll be right back to you, brother.
No problem. So, everybody, I have to say I'm pretty excited for this show. It's going to be a little bit different than we normally do. My friend Bishop Christina is going to be calling in. She is going to be probably looking about 8:20, so you have to deal with Dennis and my crazy asses until then, but little bit different in her approach. Yes, she is a woman of the cloth. She also helps out a lot and is part of Bishop James Long's show. And another thing with Christine, though, is she's not so by the book as far as the religious aspect of it goes, which is really, really cool, talking with, you know, her and her perception of things, because she does bring the God factor into it, but also doesn't. It's really cool, and I think you guys will enjoy hearing what she has to say. A lot of what she does is, like, for example, I was with her at Fox City's Paracon up in Appleton, Wisconsin, where Scott Grunewald was there, and they were hanging out, which he's an ordained minister, so getting the two of them together was hysterical. But she did have a set of religious tarot cards that I have actually never seen before. But she did a reading for me. She's not, you know, it was the first time she'd ever used them. It was everything. And she was basically going off of her interpretation of what this angel or demon or whatever it was that was on the cards, and then doing the translation into a 3-card reading. Well, she had done some pretty, pretty cool stuff with me that I, you know, it wasn't like, oh my God, it's changed my life. But it was one of those things where I sat back, I'm like, I could actually see where you're getting this from. And she's just a great, great person, and definitely, definitely looking forward to talking to her tonight. Like I said, outside-the-box thinker, and employs a bunch of different theories, ideas, and procedures into her end of the paranormal. And I'm glad that we get to talk to her tonight. So, Dennis, I believe I know who that caller is, correct?
I'm not sure, but I did name it on the board, brother. So, that's Wisconsin listening in. We'll leave it at that. How's that?
I guess we can leave it at that.
Yeah, I don't want to drop any names, but her initials are, hi, Naomi!
Hi, Naomi! Hi, kids, if you're listening too.
Yeah, definitely. Hi to the kids as well. But yeah, you're right, man. Bishop Christina does think outside the box. I love some of the theories and thoughts that she puts into the field itself, about the field itself. You know, she, for those that don't know or don't follow her on Facebook, she posed a question the other night that I definitely loved the responses that we were getting, or she was getting on it. So hopefully we'll touch into that. We'll get some of her thoughts on some of the other craziness that goes on in this field.
Yeah, and like I was saying when you were on screen, it's like with her, is she takes so many different elements of, and extremely knowledgeable in the paranormal, but also brings the religious aspect into it too. That not a lot of people can do that with accuracy. People do try and do it, but not to the level of where she's at and study it. And I mean, yeah, there are other people. Like I said, she works on Bishop James Long's show with him. So the two of them just have some really, really interesting conversations. And some of it gets to the point of like, all right, if I laugh at what was just said, am I going to be damned to hell faster than I already am? I don't know. So it gets a little intense as a listener, but in a good way. So I think with the three of us, we're definitely going to have some fun.
Most definitely. But, you know, I'll be there holding the door for you because I'm pretty certain I'll be there first anyway. And not just because I have you by a couple of years in age, and only a couple, by the way, smart aleck, don't get carried away on me.
Yeah, I was going to let that one lie. But here's
you were
going
to skip an opportunity to get a dig in on me? What is wrong with you?
Yes. Well, call it my forgiving side that's coming out right now. But No, actually, and for those of you who don't know, Dennis and I, and I'm sure that being in the paranormal world that your friends and you have the same kind of thing or something along the lines of it. Dennis and I have made a pact that whichever one of us goes first, we're going to come and haunt the crap out of the other one. And EVPs and all that stuff and try and get what we so, or try and produce whoever ends up passing on first. Try and produce what we've been so after. And it's like you take of what your investigative procedure is, whatever it may be per group, and you follow that to try and actually give that information out now to where it would be 100% validation, no questions asked.
Now, let's just say those will be some of the screwiest EVP sessions ever.
Oh,
Dennis,
gotcha.
Are you here with us? Oh, look, spirit farts.
Yeah, I got something lined up for you, too. Not farts, but just messing with you.
Well, I mean, God forbid, neither one of us go anytime soon, but you know, if it does happen, I definitely want to see what kind of weird EVPs we're going to get from the other. I've got a really good feeling one of them is going to involve lotion and skin.
No, it's not, okay? It is not going to involve that.
So, it will be a definitive response, though. There is no question that that would be an EVP from me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
you know,
no, I know that.
Everybody has their joke amongst their friends that, you know, no, if they were ever taken hostage, you would know that, you know, oh, my God, that is Tommy. They do have him. Well, that's going to be our EVP session. It will be a beyond the shadow of a doubt. Holy crap, yeah, that's Dennis. So we'll see
then,
how it works out.
And then I know exactly what's going to happen, too, is you're going to astral project yourself to Bruce Tango and do the exact same one for him just to hear him laugh.
Well, sure.
I guarantee that's your agenda. You're like, I'm going to go mess with Matt. Oh, I got to go visit Bruce.
Well, yeah, Bruce is going to have to be in on it. I'm kind of thinking that we need somewhere, but now if spirit has traveled, you know, be it Grey Ghoul or, you know, something like that, you know, that would be it, Grey Ghoul bus lines. I like that. But, yeah, we have to have some location where, you know, you can get a buttload of people around to do the investigation and be present for this experiment and see what actually happens.
That is a damn good thing that I didn't even think about. What would actually need to be done is you would have to have a location that is known not to be haunted, so there's no cross-contamination. You can't say, oh, I'm going to go to Pennhurst and we'll meet there. No, you can't do that. Because then how do you know what you're getting is what you're getting? It would have to be, no, I'm going up to the BP on the corner of whatever and whatever. That would be like the meeting place.
As long as it's not, you know, somewhere in Chicago, because with all the killings and everything there's really nowhere there that's not haunted, right?
Yeah, I know, right? But there's also
It would definitely have to be some place where, you know, it's not known to be an active location. So that kind of leaves it soft. Now, you know, we spend all our time trying to search out active locations. And for this experiment, which God discussion in chat says, if you guys can pull that off, hopefully a long time into the future, it would certainly make news. Yeah, it definitely would. Hopefully we can, you know, between now and then, figure out where a supposed non-active location is at.
Well,
but I saw an article.
Go ahead.
Well, let's establish what?
All right, let's establish a small amount of protocol. Say for example, we picked John's Deli in Cleveland, Ohio. So just for example, in choosing John's Deli in Cleveland, Ohio, if I were to pass on tomorrow, we'd have to figure out some sort of date, which would be, hey, I want you to go and validate that there is nothing going on there. I want, you know, do a full investigation for a couple days and make sure that there is not anything. It's completely, completely stagnant. And then we'll meet in 10 days after my death. Your stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we have so stringently through all of our different investigations and locations and everything, we've so stringently set up all of these protocols. This would be something that we would have to make sure the protocol is followed, and we would have to have protocol in place prior to. Now, in the room here in the chat, God discussion says it would probably have to be somewhere familiar. Well, that makes sense. You know, unless Spirit is able to discover, you know, where to go that's an unfamiliar location, and I'm not sure that, well, I mean, from everything that we've seen so far, you know, pretty much all the history, all the research and everything, you always end up with familiar spirit there. You know, it was somebody on that land or somebody that was, you know, in the case of the one spirit I have here in my house, he was one of the soldiers that passed from one battlefield south of me headed to the battlefields north. So that would definitely throw in a totally different aspect of being able to set this up. It does make it quite interesting to figure out how we would do this.
Yeah, I'd hate to even, I'm sorry for all the morbid darkness that this actually is behind this thought and thought process, but hey, we all know we're going. Might as well have fun with it and help each other out, right?
Well, precisely. I mean, oh, look at that. Oop, never mind. Okay, well, that was kind of freaky.
Oh, never mind. It's probably Christina trying to call in. Was that a Skype? I just looked. Was it a Skype number or phone number?
I don't know, but it had her name, so I'm assuming it was a Skype. But it flicked and left. But, yeah, I mean, protocol would definitely have to be set in place. We'd have to figure out protocol so that, you know, we would actually know what to do. Now, as far as the 10-day period, I like the idea of that. But, yeah, I mean, as far as, you know, the morbidity and everything, and, well, in the realm that we deal all the time, you know, doing investigations and so forth, I don't think there's much morbidity to it so much as it is a huge interest in wanting to know and wanting to further my own knowledge. I mean, that's why I got into it, not to quote-unquote talk to dead people. But now I have a number that doesn't show up with a name. Stand by, I'm going to screen out.
All right. Done. Well, that's Christina said that's me. So no screening needed.
661 area code.
She just, when you were talking, she sent me a message. She just wrote, "Yep."
Okay. Well, let's see. I'll bring her live right now then.
All right.
Ta-da-da. Hi everyone.
Hello, Christina.
Hey Christina, how are you?
I will. Thank you. That was indeed me.
It's the great powers of deduction. It's not like we were expecting a whole bunch of other people to call anyway.
Well, that's good. I'm tired. No, I apologize. I tried to Skype in, and it wanted me to press 1, and for the life of me, I couldn't figure out how to bring up the keypad, but I figured it out eventually. So.
Yeah, I have to press 1 when I call in on phone also, and it took me 3 or 4 different nights before I figured out I could bring up my keypad on my phone without screwing up and hanging myself up.
I'm a little tech-tarded. I really can't do these things that fast.
Yeah, it's all entertainment value by the time you're said and done.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, hey, Dennis, Christina would be a perfect person. At the beginning of the show and throughout, we've been talking about if Dennis or I passes away before the other one, we made a pact that we're going to figure out a way to help move the field along if it's possible. So we were trying to figure out a way to basically set up, like, if I pass away, and where we're at right now is, like, if I passed away tomorrow, we choose a location that we know is not haunted. Dennis and his team would go there, investigate the place for X amount of days, 4, 5, 6, and then go through and review all the evidence and make sure that it's not haunted, but that I would go there in 10 days and I would try and put as much as I can out there of what we use today in the paranormal field to collect. I know it's, like I said, I know it's kind of a morbid thing, but at the same time, it's like, well, for us to go out there and we bust our ass to try and figure out new ways and new ideas and new advancements in the field, if you set it up, then basically post-mortem, hey, we're going to meet here. I'm going to try and make the lights light up. I'm going to try and make the ball move. I'm going to try and, you know, make myself physically seen. I'm going to try, you know, and give as many answers as I can on all devices, hopefully simultaneously, which will be irrefutable evidence that paranormal exists.
That would be very interesting. I've been collecting information about the paranormal since I was 6. And I have learned a couple of things, because I've also studied quantum physics and all that to try and grasp the paranormal and how it works. The first thing is, you can be at many places at once, and it would be hard for you to know when 10 days was, because time is a construction of the brain. And once you pass away and you're not stuck in a body that has to occupy one space at one time, you could meet Dennis in simultaneous places. The other interesting thing that's been done by Houdini, he loved to test mediums. He was one of the first skeptics out there. And he set up a code word with his wife, just a phrase. And she went out and sought mediums until one of them told her the special pass key. And it took a while, but only one medium was ever able to do it. And I'll be darned if I can't remember his name, but he was heavily studied. He was the only one that the Society for Psychical Research was stumped about. And he found the pass key. And I believe it was Elizabeth, it's real. That was the pass key. So if you guys set up a code word, you know, you could even go into the place and Matt would have a special pass key, a special code word. You could bring a medium with you, but even using that on an EVP would be fantastic. Also bear in mind that 10 days probably isn't long enough for the learning curve of how to be dead and use your energy and stuff. Because I've known that if people pass away, in the first few days, unless they were pretty spiritually attuned, I was not able to get a hold of them or get anything from them. It usually takes a couple of months of them being used to being dead. But still, I think it's a great idea. I think the passkey and an EVP with the passkey would be key.
Yeah, well, the reason I went with the 10-day idea here, and Christine, I know you being involved with the cloth and all that stuff, is your after last rites and all that kind of stuff is done in like the Catholic religion, that there's a abundance, and I have a different theory on this too, but there's an abundance of when somebody has an emotional connection with somebody, like a mother or father or grandmother or grandfather or something like that, or a child, that it's usually within the first 10 days after that person's passing, more the first or second day, that the family members or friends or whoever are in tune with that person and have real deep, true feelings for them will be visited by that person.
You know, you're right. That is true. In the first 10 days, I'll often get a message, or people usually have visitations, the after-death visitation. So that makes sense. I've never understood how that works as opposed to someone who's been dead for a very long time who seems to have the ability to do a whole bunch of neat stuff. If you go to, like, notorious haunts, and there are ghosts, the famous ghosts there from a long time ago, you tend to get, like, more activity and, like, really, really powerful activity. Have you noticed that? That's what I've seen in the field.
Or, I mean, what I've noticed is more, you know, the EVPs are stronger, they're clearer, they're more intelligent responses. You know, given a known active location. But I've never really done anything with, you know, an actual recent passing. I mean, I've always dealt with locations that are, you know, historically haunted. So that
right.
does bring up a good question of, you know, what, well, how would you ascertain what you were actually getting or who you were getting it from without the, you know, keyword? So, I don't know. That definitely brings in a new thought to it.
Yeah, I think that the passkey or the word or whatever you use, don't use numbers. For some reason, I've never seen or even gotten a message from the other side that involved numbers. That's why we don't win the lottery. I'm a psychic who plays the lottery, and I can't win. And I do it for the irony of being a psychic who can't win the lottery than any hope of actually winning. But any kind of passkey that's, like, very particular to you guys and unusual, and I think Matt's right. I think the first 10 days, you know, when you brought up that point, is excellent. And it would be as simple as an EVP at that point, a medium and an EVP, or no medium and just an EVP. That would certainly be some strong proof of survival of death.
Yeah, and that's, you know, like, I mean, one of the stories that I've told countless times of what got me into this was my grandfather passing away when I was 7. And I'm 7 years old. I sworn he actually came to me and told me goodbye and that he loves me at, I don't know, 1, 2 in the morning, whatever. And it was an hour or two later, my mother came in and woke us up. My brother and I told us that we had to go because, she came in and told us that we need to go. And I said, why is it? Because granddaddy went away.
Oh,
she asked me, what do you mean? I said, well, they came and told me goodbye and he left me. Did he go away? So needless to say, it left my mother standing there kind of slack-jawed for a moment.
Right.
But,
wow.
You know, from the time I was 7, and, you know, when I was 16, my brother passed away also, and he was 4 months short of his 21st birthday. I'm 16, and at the moment that he passed, I'll swear that I can give you the time that he passed. But of course, the coroner's report gave it, you know, 3-hour block, that dead center in that 3-hour block was when I felt him and heard him tell me that, you know, he'd see me later and still look out for me.
Oh, but, wow.
So, you know, that was two instances of almost immediate when, you know, a family member passed that I was told goodbye or communicated with somehow. So, you know, that's kind of what brought this up between Matt and I. It's like, you know, this would be phenomenal if we can go, you know, the minute you pass away, I want to go wherever you're at and, you know, see if we can actually get proof of being able to talk to you on the other side. So that's what started this whole weird conversation.
Well, I think it's a really great idea. Why wouldn't we try that? You know, why would I'm sure that even other investigators before us have made pacts like this and tried.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's something that I guess is in a way a little bit taboo to talk about. You know what I mean? Like, it's talking about an individual's mortality and how to, I guess, figure out what's after or not pay attention to the fact that they're not with us anymore. And that's not the message that I'm trying to get across. I mean, and Dennis nor I are trying to get across. It's when you think about it is from somebody who goes out like all of us do and try and speak to or try and communicate or try and, you know, get spirit to do something to try for our own knowledge to see what's out there. That's pretty much all it is. It's like, hey, it's an agreement between both of us. If we die, yeah, I'm going to use it to not exploit, but just to confirm and pass it along, saying, hey, this is to help the field, not an individual.
Well, exactly. And also, there's nothing wrong with communicating with the dead, with investigating it. And I have this whole thing where, you know, people are like, well, you're a priest and you're an independent Catholic and you're a bishop and how can you be Christian and talk to the dead and you're a necromancer? I actually explain that like really easily and then make them feel bad. But but the fact of the matter is, in this field, if we can come back with even the smallest thing, and it could be something completely insignificant, and someone else reads that, and it helps their grief, it lifts them up, because they now feel affirmed in their faith that there's something after this, then it's worth it. If it not only furthers science, but it helps to soothe the human heart and calm our fear of death, then why wouldn't we do something like that? Nothing wrong with being realistic about the fact that we're not going to live forever. And we should use that fact to spur us to follow our dreams and to tell people we love them and to always live every day as if it's a gift, because it's not going to be there forever. So I don't think there's anything wrong with accepting our mortality and then looking towards trying to show other people that we live forever in some form. It really helps people to get through life to know that.
Well, I mean, part of why I do what I do is simply to make sure that I can set somebody's mind at ease that their loved one is okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that would be the sole purpose for doing this. Now, as far as, you know, being morbid and, you know, talk to the dead and all that, well, okay, fine. I mean, I guess it's a lot more morbid when a mortician performs an autopsy and, you know, dissects a body. I mean, it's not a matter of being morbid. It's a matter of trying to, well, man's search for what's on the other side of death has been ongoing from the dawn of time. And this is just the way that we're doing it current day. So I don't see anything wrong with it, so long as you're doing it respectful and you keep in mind that, you know, the spirits that you're talking to are, you know, loved ones of somebody.
Exactly. You know, I had, when I came out of the closet as a psychic, and that's exactly what it felt like, I was doing church work, and I would bump into someone. And I'd suddenly be driving, and here's a perfect instance. John pops into my head. I'm going to use fake names. John pops into my head, and I hear very clearly someone say he and his wife are struggling with infertility. And I want you to lay hands on them, which is like praying over them. And I'm like, you lay hands on them. I'm going to walk up to somebody and say, hey, I hear you're infertile. What the hell? Sorry, God, find someone else for that shit. But anyway, I just keep feeling like I have to talk to this guy. And I walk into the church office in the middle of the day, and he works full time, and he's standing there. And I'm like, hey, John, I gave him a hug. And he's like, oh, Christine, I wanted to talk to you because Father's busy. You know, we've been struggling with infertility. And I'm just like, the first sentence out of his mouth. Like, seriously? So I prayed for him. But, you know, I used to do that stuff. But when I came out of the closet and I started working with different teams, I did not want to do readings on people. I only wanted to do walkthroughs because I just felt like it was wrong. Somehow I couldn't get rid of that stigma that I had through church work. And I went to see Chip Coffee do a reading, and I sat there, and two things hit me. The first was that I was at least that accurate, and so, you know, I could do this. I was always concerned that I wasn't really able to do this. And you know, I'm kidding myself. It's not real. But then the second thing was I saw how people felt once they heard something about their loved ones. And I watched something leave them, this burden just disappear. And I said, I want to be able to do that for people. If I can do that, why wouldn't I? And just like Matt said, that's what it's about. This is furthering our knowledge base. But more importantly, I mean, we stopped studying this stuff as a real science in the early 1900s. And as Tesla said, that was wrong. Well, if we were probably right at the cusp of understanding something when we backed away and made it a stigma to study the paranormal. And we need to get back into it as a field of serious inquiry because, again, if you could get rid of that fear of death, that is the center of every single one of our neuroses. And you get rid of the fear of death, and it will completely change people's lives.
But it could also change it for the worse, too.
That's true. Well, no matter what gift you give people, they screw it up, don't they?
Yeah,
we're off.
God messed up with free will, didn't he?
Absolutely. You know, yeah, go ahead and give us a gun to play with and then say don't touch it. Yeah, that was a good idea. But he didn't ask me first. I would have told him.
Stupid snakes and apples and naked people. Yeah, I know. You can't trust them.
Well, exactly. It's such a huge problem, even especially in this field where everything can be so dangerous if misused. just like in any science where you're studying chemistry, you're studying biology, and whenever they make a discovery, unfortunately, the first thing I think of is, boy, can that be weaponized? Because you know that's what's going to happen. So you're right. Loss of a fear of death, that might be a problem too.
And, you know, speaking of and going into the religious aspect of it and paranormal investigations and all that, and I don't know how much experience you have with this versus, well, more than anybody else that I've talked to. But, all right, when you have, and I'm touching on tidbits of your post, which we'll get into because, wow, that turned in, you could print that out and send it to any publisher for a book, and they'd probably print it. That was pretty awesome. But as far as, like, demonic and demonology and stuff like that, to actually come across a true demon in the field, it's maybe, what, 1 in 1.5 million of what people are misconceiving of what an actual demon is versus what an actual demon is.
Right.
So, I mean, is that pretty accurate? And just because you get a gruff EVP doesn't mean that it's a demon?
Oh, or the mocking of the Trinity? I absolutely agree. Right. If someone was a dickhead in life, they're a dickhead in death. I'm sorry, this is probably a family show. That little man who stops the words from coming out is dead. I apologize.
See, Matt, I told you, I'm not the only one with a broken filter.
No, and well, Christina, you are on Full Spectrum Unleashed, which it isn't anything goes show, so.
I have a wonderful parishioner down south who says, she's like, I love my bishop, she curses.
Well, we tried to set it up for, like, you know, PG-35, but then I couldn't let Matt listen.
I don't have my collar on, so it doesn't count.
I'm only 32. I should not be involved in this show.
So I apologize, but you know what? If you're a jerk in life, you're a jerk in death. If you are an abusive asshole in life, you're going to be an abusive asshole in death, and even more so because now you have the ability to abuse a bunch of people all at once. So a lot of people will get an EVP, they'll get a hit, a physical slap, they'll get a scratch, and a lot of people are like, oh, I have a demon. The two biggest dangers in this field from a clergy point of view is, one, seeing demons everywhere, and two, not seeing them at all, because you have to stand in the middle ground and be very skeptical. Well, it may not be a demon, but always knowing that that's a possibility. I have bumped into one, and it was pretty awful and unmistakable. And, you know, I can tell you about that experience, but I would say, yeah, it is a rarity, but you just have to be so careful because a haunting can turn into something very serious. And there are entities other than, you know, major demons. I'm a part of this paranormal group, and I love it. There's some very great people there. But someone will come on and they'll ask a question, and I actually happen to have the answer, and I'll explain it. But before I can post, three people have jumped on there and they said, oh, it's the demon from Paranormal State, that eye demon. And I'm like, you realize that, you know, there's not three of them out there splitting shifts or anything. It's not like there's only one and he was on TV, so he's everywhere. And also, I'm like, guys, don't tell them that. You're going to freak them out now, and they're not going to listen to anything. So, you're absolutely right. It is a huge problem to jump to that conclusion.
Now, I have a location that I pretty much utilize as my team training grounds. It started out, you know, I'm a contractor by trade in my, like, you know, real life. Not the, you know, pretend life where I go out and, you know, talk to dead people. So in this place that I did a remodel on, I just kept having weird crap happen, like footsteps down a hallway. Things would move. My tools would move. And finally I'm like, all right, I get the point. Now, this is an office building in a cemetery. I understand I have dead all around me. I'm comfortable with that. I seek them out in my off hours. I don't need you screwing with me during my working hours. But I decided one night I would go in with my recorder, and I walked through the whole place, got into one. Now, I got a couple of EVPs here and there, a couple of really good ones. I actually asked at one point, I'm sitting in like their little reception area. The recorder is sitting off to the table beside me. I asked, you know, what do you like the changes that have been made? You know, how do you like to look at the building? And I got back a fabulous EVP that says, good work. Okay, well, I know there's one in here that's not an ass. And then I got into the basement, and I stepped into one particular room, and I got, get out, fucker. Okay.
Wow.
Of course, you don't hear it. It's on EVP. Well, after I completed all the renovations and everything, because I had had so much happen in there, I had joined a team, and I took this team in there, kind of a ragtag team, but they were pretty good people. Went into that room. I'm 37 minutes into recording. I haven't, you know, broke it down into separate files. I've just kept the recording going while I walked through the basement with two other investigators. I go in that room, and I said, all right, well, last time I came in this room, I was by myself, and this time I brought friends with me. What do you have to say this time? Now, bear in mind, I've got 37 minutes of recording going, and I hear on the recorder, after review, choke that fucker.
Who?
I got a pet name. And then I started into a coughing fit. 5-6 seconds of just heavy coughing. Not a single cough through the first 37 minutes. And then you hear the same voice kind of screams, hollering, get a grip. Like, okay, well, that's twice in that same room that I've been referenced as a fucker. All right. Well, I left that team, formed my own. Once again, that same exact room and that same voice. It was me and one other investigator went into that room, and the recording that I picked up this time, the other investigator actually asked the question, you know, we were all in here a little while ago. Now Dennis is in here. I hadn't been in with him earlier. I was upstairs waiting to do the radio program. And the response that came back on the recorder was, fucker, I want to fight.
Whoa.
I'm like, okay, that's three different times in that same exact room, with that same voice, and he's called me an effer every time. I'm convinced he was a dickhead in life because he's certainly one in death.
But he likes you.
Yes, I made a friend on the other side. So you're right. You know, if they're an ass in life, they are that way in death. Now, at no point in time, even though I got, you know, and I mean, I felt the pressure on my throat, started the coughing and everything else, got the EVP saying, you know, choke that heifer. At no point in time did I believe there was anything demonic. I think I just have pissed off entity that, well, I spoke with another psychic, and her response was, I get the feeling that he doesn't believe he's dead, and he's looking for records and proof that he's dead. I'm like, well, okay, that kind of makes sense, because this room is like the oldest files for that cemetery, just stacked in box after box after box. So
wow.
It kind of makes sense that you know, that's what he's in there doing, is trying to find records. Can you see the chat?
Yes, I was just looking. There's a really great question.
Yeah.
The question is, if spirits are bad after death, if they were in real life, how does this address redemption and transformation? And that's an excellent question. And a lot of the problem with the paranormal is, and I'm working with different people who are doing experiments in this exact question is, are they actually entirely still here? Because they can be in several places at once. You'll go to one place and talk to one spirit and come over here, and this spirit will reference the fact that you talked to that one 300 miles away, and they know, like everybody knows everything. So are they here and in heaven? Are you actually dealing with a dead person is another question that comes up. So let's say I've had one instance where I knew I wasn't dealing with a dead person. I was actually dealing with a time rift because I was seeing this 19th century British sea captain in a basement in Palatine in 2012. And he was seeing me in his quarters on his boat going to India. And we were arguing about who was where. So, you know, let's set that argument aside. Not even argument. I think there's so much complexity to the field that there isn't just one phenomenon. I think there were several. However, let's say it is a person who is here. They haven't crossed over, and they're a dick. So they're just, you know, like they want to choke people. They want to do this. They want to do that. But they're not demonic. They're human. That opportunity for redemption is still there, but I believe that it's harder after death to come to a place where you are ready to be transformed than it is in life. See, in my faith, which is an independent Catholic faith, we have a concept called purgatory. Purgatory is not a third option between heaven and hell. Purgatory is heaven's mudroom. It's where you go to get rid of whatever bitterness and addiction and pissiness and ego is left. C.S. Lewis said that when you get to heaven, you're going to be surprised at how little of you there is there. It's to burn away, to purge all that bad stuff. It's not a place of punishment. It's a place of preparation. So if the soul is still a jerk and they're here, there's nothing that says that, you know, purgatory is an actual place. It's a state of existence. He just may be still going through it. He's still acting out. He may not necessarily be in hell. And he may be in a place where he's being purged, but it's taking a long time because there was something in him that was redeemable, but he's just not getting with the program. So there's that possibility. And the thing is, with hell, like the demons are here, are they still in hell? Well, of course they are, because they carry it with them. And the same is true of souls here. If a spirit comes back from heaven to visit you, they have heaven with them. And the same with this guy. If he's in purgatory because he simply will not get with the program, he will not let go of that that anger and bitterness, then he's got it with him. So I would say, of course, redemption is already there. It's happened. He just hasn't been willing to let go of what he needs to get into heaven. So that would be my personal position, and I hope that makes sense. But the one thing I love about purgatory is this. The two biggest human problems are pride and selfishness, right? Well, we know that for some reason the prayers of people on earth can help those in purgatory. Think about this. What if, you know, all of our actions have consequences that go out through time. I yell at the clerk who's having a bad day and she screws up and her boss fires her and now her kids are out of a home and it just goes on and on. Someone drinks and drives and gets into a crash and everybody's late and it just goes on and on. What if when we die and read near-death experiences, because this does happen, we have to feel the results of every single one of our actions going out through time. And that's our purgatory. We have to know and feel the justice of every bad thing we ever did so that we can understand the impact we had, all right? So let's say that's where you are. When you're in purgatory, there's nothing you can do. You can't get out of it. You can't work yourself out of it. You can't do anything to stop it. So as a proud person, you have to rely on prayers and on God to complete the process. So you're no longer self-reliant. The people praying for you, they're learning charity because they're praying for people they've never known. Purgatory is a beautiful concept. We got it from Judaism. It's in scripture. So here's a religious concept that really helps us understand what could be happening in the paranormal with those people. So that's how I'd answer that question.
Well, purgatory in Catholicism is viewed as a place you don't want to go. It's nothingness. It's not happiness. It's not sadness. It's virtually just nothingness. Like your soul isn't worth either or.
Well, actually, no. The teaching is that if you get into purgatory, you're going to heaven. That's it. You're in. You're done. If I get into purgatory, I'm going to be like, yes. What you're doing there is just getting ready to see God. I mean, in heaven, scripture tells us nothing unholy can enter heaven. Well, when I die, I ain't going to be that holy yet. Yeah, I can. But the holier you become in life, the less egotistical you become in life, the less need you have of purgatory. So I think you may be thinking of limbo, which is a concept they got rid of because it doesn't make any sense. But purgatory is, it's heaven's mudroom. It's the shower you take before you get into heaven. If you get into purgatory, you're done. It's not a third option. It's heaven. It's just preparation for heaven.
Well, hey, Dennis,
I'm going to have to stay a long time there because it'll take me a long time to get my shit together.
Yeah, I was going to say, Dennis, there may actually be hope for us yet.
I'm not thinking
I'll
stand the whole...
in the back door. I'll lick my hand stamp and put it up to your wrist so you can get in.
But no, there's, you know what, there is two things as far as that I've seen personally. If you don't want to read a ton of books, this is for our listeners, but if you don't want to read a ton of books, you don't want to do a ton of research and just want to watch two movies that kind of explain what we're talking about right now, one is What Dreams May Come, which that movie is phenomenal with Robin Williams from like the 90s.
Yeah, that was a really, really interesting one.
And then also 7 Pounds with Will Smith from 2008.
Yes. I heard of that. I haven't gotten a chance to see it. There's also a very thin 70-page story by C.S. Lewis called The Great Divorce that discusses this. That's fascinating because people start out in hell, and if they can just realize that they don't want to be there, boom, they move up. And it's the neatest thing. That one's very good, too. There's a question here on the chat. Is purgatory in the Bible? And the answer is yes. It's in a book called Maccabees. Now, there's this thing between the Protestant Bible and the Catholic Bible. Catholic Bible has 7 more books in it than the Protestant one. Really quickly, the 7 books were always in there. It's called the Septuagint. They're always in there. Jesus and the apostles, of the 326 quotes of the Old Testament that they said in the New, 322 of them were from the version of the Old Testament that the Catholics have. All those 7 books are in the Old Testament, the extra one. Maccabees is one of them. Martin Luther got rid of them. He decided he didn't want them in there because of purgatory, which is in them, and also because a lot of them reference the fact that it's faith and works and not just faith alone that saves you. So he wanted to get rid of them, and he did. Anyway, in the book of Maccabees, 2 Maccabees, I can find the exact reference. Judas, in this story, the Greeks have taken over the temple and they've defiled the entire temple and the lantern, the lamp that stands before the Holy of Holies. They have dumped pig's blood in the oil. And Judas Maccabee has to send people out to go get holy oil. But the little bit of holy oil they have left lasted for 8 days, and that's Hanukkah. It's the story of Hanukkah is in Maccabees. After they battle, Judas sees his men dead in the field, and he goes up to them, and he turns over their vests, and they've got idols in the pockets. And he realizes they were killed because they were committing idolatry. And so he gathers all of his men together. They bury the men who had idols. And then scripture says, and then they prayed for their souls that they might be loosed of their sins. For it is a good and holy thing to pray for the dead. Also, Jesus says, if you blaspheme against the Holy Spirit, you will be thrown into prison and you won't be allowed out until you've paid the last penny. Well, you can't get out of hell. Where is he talking about? You know, there are a lot of references to it. I could give you all of them if you'd like to email me at charismaticuniversalist@gmail.com. I can send you the pamphlet on that. But we got it from the Jews because the early church was Catholic and they took everything from Judaism. The Jews pray for their dead. They're supposed to pray for one whole year. The prayer is called the Shema. However, this is great. Tradition in Judaism says that you pray for 364 days for their soul to be freed from its sins because you don't want to imply that the person needed the entire year because that would be rude. So I just love it. So anyway, it is in the Bible. And if you want to email me, you can certainly you can see my name in chat, Charismatic Universalist, just those two words together at gmail.com, and I can give you more info on that.
You know, and there is a lot of stuff with religion, and I'm not nearly obviously as vested as you, but when you start to break down Catholicism, Lutheran, Protestant, like, you know, all those religions, pretty much most of them were derived from Judaism, and a lot of people, not saying everybody, but there are a lot of people out there who don't and are afraid by the Muslim religion. But even Muslim comes from the Bible and Judaism.
That's correct. There's one particular story, in fact. Abraham in Genesis wants a son. God promises him a son. And then for 19 years, you can follow the timeline. Abraham just leaves his home. He goes out in the middle of the desert. God says, I'm going to give you a son. And then 19 years go by. And Abraham's nearly 100. And his wife Sarah says, well, maybe God meant you were going to have a son with another woman. So take my slave, Hagar. And so Abraham does, and Hagar bears a son named Ishmael. Well, Ishmael and Hagar start to get prominence over Sarah, Abraham's wife, and Sarah gets pissed and says, get rid of Hagar and Ishmael. so Abraham grudgingly does get rid of the slave and her son. And God approaches Hagar and says, don't worry, I'm going to make a great nation out of Ishmael also. And because Isaac, Abraham's other son, becomes the founder of Judaism, Ishmael becomes the head of Islam. So they both claim the same father, Abraham.
Yeah. So for people out there who didn't know that, yes, I wasn't blowing smoke up your ass. No. You heard it first. It is true.
It is true. Right from the beginning, that sibling rivalry was always there. They can claim the same parents, the same book, the same places. So some of the tension has been there right from the beginning.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what always makes me laugh about, like, Israel and Palestine and all that. It's like, you're fighting have been fighting for centuries a religious war, but your religions are pretty much damn the same. Yeah,
exactly.
But a couple different books, like, you would have had a lot more family members at your family reunion if you just step back and look at the picture like, oh, shit, we do follow the same God. But no.
Exactly.
Of course not.
Well, that's part of the problem.
But again, that also comes right back to the... crap. Hang on, let me run down the street here and I'll catch the clue train in a moment and remember what the hell my train of thought was.
Yeah, that's a good interjection there, Dennis.
Yes. Valid point, Dennis, valid point.
It was seamless. It was seamless.
Yes. There's no tied
right into
theory.
What we were doing.
Yes.
Christina, do you hear that also? The wah, 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 wah.
I know I could do it for you, though.
Here we go. I got the word. I found. Don't screw this up or I'll forget it again. It also ties back to the ego and everything else that we were referencing earlier as far as purgatory and so forth. That both sides are still holding on to their ego that tells them they are right and the other is wrong, while meanwhile they're just one and the same virtually. See, I knew I'd find a clue in there somewhere.
Wait, hold on. That's what you forgot? Not
yes.
Citing anything? That
Matt,
you
not want me to play with the soundboard, do you?
No, and you're not going to because it's not the time or the place. But that seriously is what you forget. It was I thought you were going to be like, oh well, it's said in scripture X Y Z. No, that's what you forgot.
No, it goes right back to the ego and free will that we had mentioned earlier is what has kept this battle over there going for centuries. That was my point. It's all ego and free will.
Well, there's a lot of other stuff that goes, and we won't get into that tonight, but there's a lot of other things that go into it, too, as far as government intervention and, pretty much saying that if you don't do this, God is going to hate you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of social and political influence on it also that keep these people constantly fighting with no intervention from anybody else saying, you know what, you guys are being stupid. Here's your book. Trade, read them, and see if it's worth it. No,
mm-hmm.
Nobody has ever stepped in centuries and done that.
And that's a lot of what my church is about. The Charismatic Universalist Church, I've broken off from the Catholic Church, so I'm more independent Catholic, and I'm ordained a Universalist minister and will receive ordination from a group with apostolic authority. So I'll be able to trace all the way back to the original apostles. Now, the thing that I had an epiphany. I knew my whole life I was supposed to be some kind of spiritual leader, and I didn't want to. I kept saying no, I didn't want to do that. But the thing about this church is, not 4 years ago, I was praying in front of the tabernacle. In a Catholic church, it's this beautiful gold sort of drum with a cross on top. It looks exactly like where the ark in a Jewish synagogue where they hold the Old Testament, the same type of structure, but inside is the Eucharist, which for Catholics is the body and blood of Christ. That's where God is in the church. So I was praying in front of the tabernacle, and I asked God, you know, what do you want me to do? It was a very low point in my life. I had basically set fire to everything I'd known. And as I'm praying, I heard very distinctly, God speaks to me a lot, usually in a very gentle, corrective way, but I was praying for the tabernacle, and he said, let me out of this gilded cage. Stop protecting God from his people. And I turned my head, and suddenly I saw the altar rail, and I saw the chain around the tabernacle, and I saw the key inside, and I thought, yeah, we really are trying to protect you from sin, aren't we? And that was never the point. Well, the church has put up so many protective devices to keep people from offending God that the church has become the new Pharisee, that you should not emphasize the law over the spirit of the law. And that's where this church, the Charismatic Universalist Church, was born, from that statement from God. And so we call everyone to the sacraments. They're there for healing. Jesus said the Sabbath was man was not made for the Sabbath. The Sabbath was made for man. You could say the same of the sacraments. God didn't make us to obey them. He made them because we need them. We need healing. We need to touch God. We need to feel better. We need to be married. We need to enter community. And that's why those are there. And so for us, we call everyone to them, I say, regardless of race, gender, sexual orientation, or marital status. I will marry gay couples, I'll marry straight couples, ordained women. If you're divorced, it will not keep you from the Eucharist or any other sacrament, because that's not why they're there. The church is a field hospital, and when you walk in without an arm bleeding and hemorrhaging to death, my job is not to yell at you for your cholesterol level. My job is to help you heal. And there are people who come to me, and I talk to them, and I counsel them, and we have weekly worship service online at Walk Talk on Saturday night. And they come and they listen, and they'll ask me questions, and I'll help them. And for some people, this church probably isn't right. You'll come here, you'll heal for a while, but you may end up going someplace else, and that's wonderful with us. The definition of religion in this church is one's own personal journey to the divine, and that's as you understand it. So that should be the job of religion, to help you heal, because life hurts, but we're more than what life does to us, and that's the church's job, to just facilitate your spiritual life and your connection to God, and that's it. So that's kind of where we grew up out of.
And that's definitely a positive outlook on stuff, due to the fact of most and pretty much any organized religion, and I'll put it in a nutshell kind of speaking, is what happens is, I'm going to give you this bullshit, you make the best of it, and be the best person that you can, and your reward is at the end.
Exactly.
And you know, and I'm sorry, but that's simplistic in a nutshell of what all organized religion is focused around, unless you're in a, you know, dust city in Africa or Egypt or Thailand or whatever. It doesn't matter where it is, but everybody has their own beliefs.
And, you know, the other thing with that I've seen over the years with religion is my dad is an ordained minister in the, like, Catholic religion. And so is our dear friend Scott Grunewald. I don't know who slipped his papers through the cracks, but no.
He's my husband from another life, I swear to God. I love that guy.
Oh, yeah, what I posted on Twitter earlier today is I said, and I tagged him, I said, "Hey Scott," I'm like, I said, "Christina's gonna be on Don and I talking on our show, talking about religion and talking about paranormal investigation and all that kind of stuff." I said, you're sister from another minister. That's how I refer to you.
That's awesome. I have to remember that one. Brother from another mother and sister from another minister. It's awesome.
Yeah. So, but no, I mean, and religion, I mean, nowadays is it's fading. I mean, you know, services have been down for years, and they started to pick up actually a little bit more recently. But service attendance has been down and everything, with people down their luck, and I think that people look at God and Jesus or Allah or, you know, Muhammad or any, it doesn't matter what it is. They look at it as an out as opposed to a tool.
Mm-hmm.
To where, oh, well, my prayers haven't been answered because I'm still losing my house and all that stuff. Well, religion is from the heart, in my opinion, to where it's not the answer to everything. It's not going to, just because you go to services and you do what it is, well, from a model, is how it should be viewed, and it's a model to model your life after, and try and be the best person that you can be, and try and believe in something, because,
right,
like, from a psychological standpoint, if you don't believe in yourself or you don't believe in the people around you, you don't believe in your family, that's the instant of your own demise.
Right.
Is if you feel that you have no outlet, that's where in interviews that I've done with people throughout the past, once you get to that point, your only outlet is to take yourself out. Well, if you believe in a higher power, it doesn't matter what it is, that's still a belief that can never go away because it can never let you down. Everything else physical in this world can let you down.
Exactly. And it's so painful for people who get their intrinsic value, who find their value and their worth in things that can change. In your status and your age and your beauty and your health and your money, that can all be taken from you in an absolute instant. In an instant. And even, you know, people say, well, I always have my intellect, and I always have, no, a good blow to the head and that's gone too. You know, everything can be taken from you in an instant. So if you put your value and worth on things of this world, your feelings about yourself are always going to fluctuate wildly. You need to put your value in the knowledge that there is an external, unchanging absolute that we call God, who loves you so much that it is his attention alone that keeps you in existence. And if God were to forget you for 1 second, you would cease to exist. And that's the reality of it. Quantum physics tells us that there has to be an observing mind to determine reality, because reality at its basis level is just potential. It's not real. A matter is just energy moving slowly enough to be seen. That's all it is. That's what E equals MC squared means. So if that's the case, then there has to be a mind looking over our level of organization and making it what it is and holding it in existence. I choose to believe that that's the way God operates. That's why he's intimately involved in our world. And if you treat God in prayer like you're just asking, sending a list to some cosmological Santa Claus in the sky is going to give you what you need, that's not what prayer is. On Sunday nights at 7 p.m., I'm doing a series on how to pray. And if you listen to the first episode, which about three Sundays ago, I talk about how prayer works. And you don't put 50 cents into the vending machine and out pops your answered prayer. It's not, if prayer is just asking for things, it makes no friggin' sense. Because God knows what you need, and he'll either give it to you or you won't. So why ask? But that's not what prayer is. If you focus your mind on reality, on thought, this is what physics says. I'm not making this up. Our thoughts affect reality on its most fundamental level. And if you focus on something and you want something to be, the simple act of saying, thy will be done, or God help me, or just thinking about the outcome changes the outcome. And you may not get what you want, but you always get what you need. And if you look backwards, you realize that that's always been the case in your life.
Yeah, no, I fully. Dennis, you've been quiet over there. What's your opinion on this?
Well, I do not attend any particular church. I haven't attended church in, let's see, I'm 44 years old. I'll bet the last time I actually sat through any full Sunday service was when I was 12 or 14. And I'll explain that. I have yet to find a church where the people don't put out false airs, so to speak. They show up on Sunday dressed in their finest. Yet you see them during the week, they look like anybody else walking down the street. Maybe they're in dirty work clothes, this, that, or the other. But what I don't mind that. But what I do find is when they act all righteous and better than thou on Sunday, and you see them Wednesday night at the bowling alley, and they're the biggest drunkard, loudmouth SOB that you just want to bust in the mouth. Yet Sunday they're this all sweet. No, it absolutely turned me off to church, and I had gone to a few of them. Now, one thing that I've discovered in having this personality and this decision was, well, I've helped build, remodel, add on to churches, and I've watched millions be spent on the churches. And one thing I discovered was I could be sitting in the parking lot of a church that we're working on and doing $2 million addition, and I can be in the outhouse in that parking lot. Is there a different communication system between me and God inside that building and outside that building? Because if there is, I haven't discovered it. I can talk to God from anywhere that I'm at. I don't have to put on my Sunday finest, and I don't have to put on this false air and go sit in there with people that I just, well, frankly, don't like.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, so that's my bit on organized religion.
Well, Dennis, you're absolutely right. I mean, going to church doesn't make you any more a Christian than standing in a garage makes you a car. And people, you know, they do this Sunday morning saint and Monday morning ain't. It's so annoying. The other thing that preachers say is there's a fine line between Saturday night and Sunday morning. A lot of people don't cross it. But the thing about church is, first of all, you're absolutely right. I did just on Sunday talked about prayer visualization in prayer and how sitting and looking at a night sky is sometimes more conducive to connecting with God than sitting in a church and looking at a crucifix. It depends on how you relate to God and what your relationship with God is. So that's very important. You can have a relationship with God anywhere. The purpose of a church community is twofold. First, to get help when you need it, because we're all in this together. And you will find people who put on airs. But sometimes if you attend for a bit and you go to a meeting, you meet the heart of the church. Like that 10% who run everything, who donate everything, who do everything, because it is 10% of any church. That's the figure. And that's in every clergy book. That's in every seminary. It's about 10% of the church that does all the work. Those are the people you want to meet. They're the wonderful ones. They're the ones who I've had people, my neighbors had 8 kids. And on December 10th, he was let go from his job. And they were living paycheck to paycheck, of course, with 8 kids. I just sent out an email blast to 10 wealthy people I knew at the church and said, here's their address. Keep me out of it. Don't tell them who did it. But if you were planning to give to a charity this Christmas, give to them. Well, I spoke to the mom a couple weeks later. My father fell deathly ill, and I was preparing to go out to say goodbye. And this was December 22nd. And I bumped into the mom, and they received, she's like, 4 hams, 6 turkeys, 2 truckloads of presents, and $7,000 in cash gifts. And it kept coming until February. And that was just one email blast to 10 people who sent it to 10 more people. So if you can go in there and you can gut it out, you will find the true heart of the community. But the second reason is it's in relationship to other people that we really find out who we are. I mean, there are saints, and then there are saint makers, people who are so awful that you learn patience. And you learn to be a better person in relationship to people you don't like. I did an entire sermon on how to love someone you don't like. And we find ourselves in that position more times than not. So that's the purpose of the church, the community. If you don't need it to get to God, then don't go. I'm of the strong opinion that you don't need to be there to be a good person and to have a strong faith. And if you have a faith that gets you through the heartbreaks of life, and helps you sleep at night knowing that it's all going to be okay and that you're loved more than you've ever been loved in your life, then that's the religion for you, and don't change it.
Now, I mean, as far as my religious beliefs, obviously I believe there is a God. I mean, you don't always have to be a damn fool not to. I can grow a tree, but I have to have a seed to start that. And the only way that I can get that seed, I can't create it. I don't know of any lab that can create it. So there has to be a higher power that created that seed for me to be able to grow a tree. That was one of the things that I knew right off the bat. Now, ironically, my grandfather, my maternal grandfather, was a Southern Baptist minister. The pound on the podium, hellfire and brimstone type. My paternal grandfather was just Baptist minister. And I didn't even like going to their churches either. So it wasn't a matter of it wasn't a matter of what church. See, if I went to their churches, I knew I had to keep my crap together. I was gonna pay for it dearly. There's nothing worse than when the pastor calls you out. Dennis, you need to sit up back there. Oh, shit. Now the whole church is turning and looking at you.
Yes.
Well, Dennis, you're also more in a Baptist area, right?
You know, I couldn't honestly answer that. There is a church on every flipping street corner in this town, virtually. And as to what the denominations of most of them are here, I don't know. I don't really pay that much attention to what they're signs say, you know, as to whether, you know, the First Church, you know, Lutheran or whatever. I just don't pay that much attention to them. But
yeah, Christina, he's in Richmond, Virginia, which is the Bible Belt.
Yeah.
Which is mostly Northwest Ohio. So. Yeah, but I grew up in Northwest Ohio, and in a little town outside of Springfield, which is kind of in like central West Ohio, west central, not far from Dayton, is where my maternal grandfather was the Hellfire and Brimstone Southern Baptist minister. And actually in Springfield, there was where my paternal grandfather was the Baptist minister. So it didn't have anything to do with being in the South and being in the Bible Belt. And Ross, you're right, I didn't want to spend 3 hours in the confession box or, you know, scrubbing the floors. So, but... yeah, more than once I can recall getting slapped in the back of the head to wake me up.
Oh.
But,
well,
I mean, everything that we've discussed so far still leads me back to our dealings with the paranormal and investigations and everything else. How does... How does one's belief, I guess, in life tie to what we're after and what we talk to, the spirits that we talk to? Do you have any idea on that? I mean, if they're not, let's say, for instance, they're an atheist. Are we still able to get spirit activity from them, do you think?
I think so. I've done a lot of studies on near-death experiences and atheists who have died and had a near-death experience and have come back and become ministers. Whether it's a good ND or a bad one, I myself had one when I was 8, a near-death experience that sort of changed things for me. But whatever your belief in life, you can believe whatever you want. The truth is still true. So if you don't believe there's an afterlife and you die and you're still awake, the truth was still true, and you're probably going, oh, holy fuck, I am in so much trouble right now. I was so wrong. I always told people, I'm like, you know, I'm going to die, and I'm going to smack myself in the head and say, I was way off about everything I believed. And I had a friend say, no, you're going to do this. You were just close. You were so close. But anyway, I think that, first of all, for the dead, your beliefs in life can keep you from crossing over. Now, there's a difference between, for me, someone who's stuck here and someone who visits here. If you're a human soul and you did not cross over, and I've encountered this in one place because you were afraid of judgment. Let's say, Dennis, someone from the Hellfire Church believes that they're going to go to hell when they cross over because they committed adultery and never told anyone about it and never got forgiveness or anything. So when they die, the door opens and the light beckons and they go, no. And they stay here and they refuse to cross over. It can affect you. But it doesn't change what would happen if you did cross over. I encountered this woman. She had a spirit, a ghost. She was stuck someplace. Not every ghost who is here is stuck. Everybody gets obsessed with that. Why don't you cross them over? And I'm like, they're dead. How do I have a better idea than them how to go be dead? I don't know how to be dead. And second, the ghost whisperer has totally screwed people's heads up about how everybody here is earthbound and they're trapped. No, they're not. Some of them aren't. There are some who are, but not everybody is. But anyway, I told her, there is no judgment waiting for you. There's only love. And you need to take the risk and go and see for yourself. And she did, and that was it. She was gone. All the EVPs from her and the activity from her and the place stopped. So your beliefs in life can keep you from crossing over. But if you're willing to take the risk and go into the light, your beliefs are immaterial. The truth is still going to be true when you get there. For a lot of people, what I do, I consult with paranormal teams. So I'll come in if they feel they need me first to do a walkthrough. And as a psychic medium, I insist that I am always blindfolded and deaf for my walkthrough. Everything I catch is then completely legitimate. There's nothing, no information that I could have gotten from the environment. And I'm blindfolded a couple of miles away from the location, so I don't even know if I'm in a house or a library. I have no clue. And I found out that I can see without seeing, so that was pretty cool. I turned my hand out and I said, piano, and there's a piano over the symbol. So that was pretty cool. But anyway, I do walkthroughs. I come in, though, during the reveal, because a lot of people have their worlds completely shaken to find out that, yes, there is someone here. Yes, there is life after death. No, not all paranormal activity is demonic, because there are some evangelical and fundamentalist religions that believe that. And then I can talk to them, the client. I can walk around the house with them and bless it. I can bless them. I can provide follow-up counseling. I can help them come to terms with it and also understand that God absolutely adores us, and there's really nothing to worry about. You know, there's nothing that's going to hurt you. And so, you know, a lot of people are more comfortable with that. And I find when I walk in and I have my collar on and everything, people tell me, and I thought that I'd make people uncomfortable with it, but a lot of people tell me, you walked in and I suddenly felt very calm and at peace, like everything was going to be okay. And so I do it that way. That's what I do, and it helps people.
Since you have an open door to the other side, to the religious side, can you do me a favor and ask God a favor for me?
Oh, absolutely.
Can you have him eliminate and abolish all of the Toyota Priuses on the road? Is that possible?
I could ask him, but then he'd have to abolish liberals. So
that's fine too.
I'm with you. I've never seen one drive really well. Just like, oh, are you kidding me? And how many Priuses have Cubs stickers on them? I don't know. But anyway, it's a Chicago joke, folks. You can ask them. You can curse them. Go for it. I don't know what would happen.
Yeah. Nothing. I thought I'd try and go more to the top.
I know what's going to end up happening. Matt's going to ask for that, and he's going to win one in some church drawing or something.
Or get hit by one.
Exactly. He'll get hit by one. There you go.
You know what? Like, honestly, as far as road stuff goes, and Dennis and I talked about it yesterday, I did have a quite spiritual moment to where I'm almost to the point of shock that I am able to do this show tonight, where I was on the bike and I was riding the rain, and I don't think you got it downtown the way that we got it out here, but yeah, it was kind of a heavy downpour. I was driving on 59, specifically like 59 in Butterfield, where they're doing all the construction and all that stuff.
That was just there today, yeah.
Yeah, well, I was heading south on 59, and you know how bad the road is crowned right there?
Oh, yeah.
Well, my tires on the bike were, like, when I came into it, there was a puddle, so I tried to stay to the middle of the right lane. And the back tires slipped down that slope to where I was doing 50 miles an hour. And I could physically see the back end of my bike. So my handlebars were going straight. My bike was perpendicular to the direction that my handlebars were going. And then it kicked back the other direction. And with all that construction with the gravel pits and all the torn up stuff that they have, that happened last night at 50 miles an hour. And unfortunately, I didn't go down. I was able to regain it. Then right afterwards, I was like, thank you, Lord, you did not kill me in road construction, which we have to deal with at all times here. But, yeah, that was a silent prayer right after I was able to regain it, and I was going straight again, soaked to the bone. But, yeah, I almost wasn't able to do the radio show tonight because I probably would have been in the hospital, if not worse.
Oh, my God.
I'm thinking the surgery to get the cycle seat out of his ass would have been longer than the rest of it. I'm thinking he probably sucked up a lot of cushion on that one.
Yeah. I've been kind of bound up.
I know a good surgeon who removed my head from my ass, so I could certainly give you that name.
I would appreciate that.
God.
You know, we're coming down to, looks like it's taking it 18 minutes right now, and one thing I do want to touch on before the show's over, what was the generation of your post that kind of went partial viral?
where did that
come from?
I don't know. I was I posted something on Facebook. It was just a simple observation and question, and I tagged all of my paranormal friends because this is what I said. Given that television shows and ghost shows on TV have created an increased demand for paranormal investigators. And so I put out there, perhaps people are over-reporting them or more comfortable reporting actual hauntings. And given that there are now over 10,000 paranormal investigation teams in the U.S. of 5 members or more, so there are more than 50,000 paranormal investigators in the country right now. My question was, bad investigators can cause and exacerbate a haunting. And going into a place with EVPs can invite something in to respond that wasn't there to begin with. And so the purpose of my post was to ask, do you think there's increased activity in the country, or do you think that people are just reporting things that were happening before, and sort of where the role of TV and investigation goes? So I asked that question, and there was a knockdown, drag-out response. I mean, there were some incredibly cogent responses that went right to the heart of the matter. But within 3 posts, there was the throwdown. Because I have friends in the paranormal from a wide spectrum of places. from all the way to everything is paranormal and there's, you know, spiritual involvement in everything and healings and crossovers and getting rid of hauntings all the way to almost completely atheist. There is nothing after this. You need to show me hardcore proof and everything in between. And I didn't even read all the posts, but I will tell you, I copied them and kept them and then deleted my original post. I didn't want the fights to continue to upset people because I was getting personal messages from people apologizing to me for yelling at my other friends who they had never met. So I was like, all right, I just got to stop this now. I think I've caused enough damage. there were just some really fascinating points. And I think more than my original question, what that shows is that people's belief systems are so intimately tied with this field and this work that to pose a question in this field is to stab at their beliefs, which is to question them. And so there was a lot of pain. There was a lot of defensiveness. And I think we all realize that. I think we all know that going into this field, we are going into it with preconceived notions of some kind. And that whenever you talk about an afterlife, you're getting into people's core spiritual beliefs. And to hurt those beliefs, to slam against them, to say, no, you're an idiot, is to actually slam against the person themselves. And so I think that's what happened.
But see, like your initial post was not that whatsoever. It was you're mm-hmm. posing questions. And for individuals to take that into their own hands, the one thing I will disagree with, and I don't know if they're listening, and I don't mean this in a personal attack, you don't have the answers. No, not a single person on this planet has the answers.
Mm-hmm.
Dennis and I, and I'm sure you can too, I mean, we can call people who have, you know, master's degrees in physiology and theology and all that stuff, they're not going to be able to give you an answer on it. So
right.
to bash somebody else's drive and ideas, that doesn't do anything because you don't have the damn answer either.
Right. Right. I agree. I think that as I said before, I think this field is entirely too complex with too many things that could be going on and too many possibilities that it requires a lot of study. And I don't think that you can rest on absolutes or assumptions. I have a master's degree in theology, and I go into this field I have changed my mind 100 times in the past couple of years because of experience, because of other people's experiences, because of reading, investigations. Every time I get a new piece of evidence, I immediately start to look at all of my other beliefs, and I'll have to get rid of some stuff. And I didn't believe in reincarnation. And then getting into this field and meeting people and having experiences, I changed my mind on that. I think we need to be flexible. I think we need to be willing to get rid of the beliefs that don't fit. And it's not just about our own experiences. It's about everybody's experiences. Other people have experienced things, and people that I trust, people who I respect, and they've changed my mind, and I haven't even had that experience. It's all, it's again, ego beliefs, what we believe about God is probably the most sensitive topic there is, because we believe our beliefs are us. And to show me wrong about who I think God is and what I think the world is to tell me that almost like I don't exist. So yeah, it got pretty serious, and that's why I deleted the post, and I wrote a second post and just said, you know what? I thank you all for apologizing to me and respecting me that way, but I'm not making anybody else upset today. It needed to stop. That was something. That was something. And I, you're right. None of us has the answers. And if you go into a field with the answers and you're not willing to change your mind or to meet people who are interested in figuring things out, then that can be a problem.
Cool. And if you go in with a preconceived notion or a set of beliefs that you're not willing to waver on in anything, it doesn't have to be the paranormal, in anything in life, you are going to find yourself sadly mistaken at some point during it, and that's just part of growing up, and you have to be mature enough to understand that you just don't have all the flipping answers. Not a damn one of us is an expert at life. Not a one of us is an expert in this field. Not a one of us is an expert. I mean, even with, you know, a master's degree in theology, and you know, you could have 6 master's degrees in it. There's always going to be something about life, death, afterlife, something that is going to leave you scratching your head going, what the hell was I thinking all those years? You know, just like you said, you've had to change your way of thinking and your thoughts, you know, hundreds of times. But I think you are right that everybody has their own thoughts and beliefs, and if you try to argue those with them, a lot of people get upset with that. Myself, hey, I'm used to it. I mean, look who I co-host radio with. He's always telling me I'm a dumbass.
Yeah, no shit, right? Oh, wait. Oh, that was towards me. Yeah, look who I co-host radio with. No shit, right? But,
yeah. No, neither one of us knows who's in charge.
The honest God, and like honest to God truth in mine and Dennis's opinion is you ask the right question. And you know what? Yes, the shows fuck everybody up. And the fact that it is more... it's more presentable now. It makes a lot more sense. There's a lot more people who watch it and get ambitious and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it happens. Are they the right people? A lot of them, no. A lot of them, yes. But for the times that Dennis and I have been doing this shit, over the years, let's see, Dennis, when do you start?
Doing investigations or start questioning paranormal and the afterlife? Like I said, questioning the afterlife and everything else. Do it.
Yeah, when you were young, before the telegraph was invented, but, I mean...
Correct.
For...
All right, one, Jake. You're going to hell.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, joy, there's a revelation.
Yeah, remember, Dennis, you're holding the door for me.
I promise.
You know, like how long, I'm trying to wrap this up in the last couple of minutes. How long have you been active?
I did my first EVP session when I was 10. So,
right, and that was on a telegraph, right?
Yes, yes. Well, actually, we didn't have enough wire to run the telegraph, so I had to borrow one of Edison's old turn wheel things and hope that it was able to scribe it into the scroll. Asshole.
All right, at least you're on board. Christina,
yeah, I've got
what
over
was,
3 decades.
What was your, not religion, but what was your defining moment for paranormal?
Mine or Christina's?
I said Christina.
Oh.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I missed the Christina part, too.
No, no.
So did I.
Well, yeah, you've been having some demon come through your phone or your Skype as you be talking. It's like, rah, 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 and that's what we hear, and then it goes back to normal.
For me?
Yeah. Every now and again, you'll be talking, and we hear your voice just normal, and then you'll start the next sentence, or in the middle of a sentence, all of a sudden it starts sounding like this.
I'm sorry, I didn't even everything sounds normal on my end, but I've had something didn't want me to do this show. My earphones disappeared, the internet went down, it's been crazy here, and that happened. But for the paranormal, I couldn't say there was a defining moment. Somebody actually had to tell me not to talk about this stuff in public because it wasn't normal. It was so accepted, and I was so accepted with all of my gifts. I didn't realize you couldn't talk about it until people started making fun of me, and then I stopped talking about it. So there really wasn't that was my defining moment, realizing that that wasn't normal, that people don't do that. They don't talk to the dead. They don't have ghosts in their house. In fifth grade, my science project was to build a Loch Ness monster habitat and explain which dinosaur it was. And I'm serious. I was just off my nut from the beginning. So.
Well, hey, on air, we got about 4 minutes. So what, any websites or contact information or anything like that you want to throw out, feel free.
Oh, thank you. You can email me at charismaticuniversalist@gmail.com. Our website, which is in the process of being revamped, is www.charismatic-universalist.org. I have several shows on Blog Talk, Saturday Evening Worship on Sunday nights. I'm doing a series on how to pray. It's for beginners, and there are 3 episodes in the archives now if you search Charismatic Universalist Church. And if you're a beginner, this will really help boost your prayer life. On Wednesday nights, I'm teaching a Bible class, New Testament Foundations First. Who wrote the Bible? When did they write it? How do you read it? What is a letter? What is a gospel? Why do they look alike? All of that on Wednesday evenings. Again, search the church for that. And just thank you, everybody, for listening. And thank you, Matt and Dennis, for having me on. I love you both, and you're just great people in the field. And just thank you for all of your wisdom and everything.
Right. Wisdom? Are you sure you're on the right show?
I am. You know what?
I was thinking...
Questioning is wisdom.
This is true. And you know what? That is the first thing they teach you in Psychology 101, no joke, is if you can't question, you will never have any sort of even anything close to an answer.
Mm-hmm.
So, but Christina, hey, you're going to be at Chicago Ghost Conference 5, right?
At what? I'm sorry?
Chicago Ghost Conference 5.
Oh, the Ghost
October
Conference.
4th and 5th.
Yep, I should be.
All right.
As long as everything goes well, I'll be there.
Yes, I will see you there, dear. Thank you so much for coming on. It has been a pleasure. You were always welcome anytime you want. And anything, just shoot it to me. We'll support on the shows. So thank you, Christina. And the last minute, thank you, Dennis. Thank you, everybody who listened. Naomi, love you. I'm glad you stuck in, and I'm glad it was inspirational for you. So that should say something. That was a direct message from Naomi. So,
oh, nice.
Anyway, good night. We will see you on Full Spectrum Radio Wednesday night, 8 to 10, same time, same place. And everybody, have a good night and say your damn prayers tonight.
Your damn
good
night, prayers?
Everyone.
Great. There's a way to get brownie points into heaven, Matt.
I was kicked out a while ago.
Oh, man. It was definitely a great show. Thank you very much, Christina. We enjoyed having you very immensely.
Thank you both. I appreciate it. It's good to see you.
Well, and if there's anything that we can do to help you in the future, by all means, don't hesitate, darling. Reach out to us. We'll do whatever we can for you.
Excellent. Thank you. Same goes for me.
What's crazy is she said that good to see you. But I don't know what kind of psychic stuff you have going on right now, but...
Well, I can feel your energies. It's always singing for me.
All right, now that we're in archive, but do you have 2 minutes at least? Because I have a question, and it's something that Dennis is going to be able to talk about more than I will.
Okay, yeah.
So, as far as, like, psychic ability and all that stuff, and yeah, we've had those conversations, and then... The religious tarot card reading thing was awesome, by the way, which I referenced at the beginning of the show. What actual psychic ability do you classify yourself in as far as medium, reader, like the list goes on and on. Like where does your psychic fall?
I'm a psychic and I'm a medium and I'm a healer. I can I'm clairaudient as well as the other one where you can see it, and clairvoyant. Essentially, I can walk into a place and I can give you the names of the spirits there. I can see while blindfolded what's around me, colors of walls, paintings. If you go to YouTube and you watch the IPRA Casa Madrid video, I'm just sitting there and I'm like, I see a 10-speed bicycle. It just popped in my head. And you can see one behind me. I was standing near it and I could feel it. So I could do that sort of thing. There you go, clairsentient, that's perfect. I can also meet people and tell them things about their past that would disturb them because I know it. So in religious terms, rather than psychic medium, I prefer the term gifts of the Holy Spirit. I can read hearts. I can remote view. I can also heal. And I don't mean just like, oh, my back feels better. I've been parts of healing where there was leukemia and it was gone inexplicably. Jeez, I hate that word. Cysts, infertility, pinched nerves, but importantly, tumors. And one person I visited was almost dead. She had cancer. She was in the hospital. Her friend brought me to her. She was a skeleton. And I prayed over her, and then I left. I never saw her again. But a year later, I received a card from her, and she told me who she was. And she said that she didn't remember my visit, but her friends told her that I had come. And she was completely cancer-free. So that I do, and it works. I don't know how or why, but I've just been able to do it. I know when to do it, and I know when it's going to work and when it won't. So I can also hear God.
he'll tell me things like, go over here and do this, don't do that. So my timing is always really good. So that's where, you know, those are the things I know I can do. But it turns out every day there's like something new that I didn't know I could do that, and I didn't know I could do this. And I mess up. I can conduct electricity, so I mess up equipment when I get upset. If I start to, I got worked up the one day, and my car's electrical system went spastic, and the car went dead and wouldn't start. We had to tow it to Iowa because I was in the middle of nowhere. And when it got to the dealership, they went in, put the key in, turned it. It was fine. Because I was in the car, I was really upset after a phone call, and the whole thing went dead. That happens all the time. So that, I don't know what word you would put to that, but those are the things that I have evidence that have happened that I've been a part of. I don't like to say that, you know, oh, I can heal people, because it's not me. I'm there, and something moves through me, and it's God. And I'll try to do it for everybody. But for some people, it works miraculously. And for other people, they just get a sense of peace and acceptance. And that's not my decision. I just go to the people I'm told to, or the people who need me come to me.
Well, do you know Barbara Leopold or no?
No, I don't know that name.
She's an amazing, amazing story. She's friends with Ursula Bielski.
And, oh, okay.
And also, like, well, I can't say closer, but I talk to her more frequently than Ursula does.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I should put you in contact with her, because, Dennis, you know, Barbara's story is fucking amazing.
Oh, definitely.
And she's local. She's in Tinley Park.
Oh, okay.
So we've had her on the show, and she was very, like, has a lot of social anxiety until she gets to know somebody. And her and I went to dinner, and we were talking about her stuff and everything. Like, she truly has an amazing story. And
wow.
It is very religious in nature.
Mm-hmm.
So it was almost like a divine healing.
Wow.
So, yeah, I think her story would be something you'd be interested in.
Well, that would be great, yeah. You could send her my email, or you can tell her to come by my Facebook and friend me, whatever she'd be most comfortable with.
Yeah, no, she's, like, after I kind of got her out of her shell about things, she's totally open now. She'll talk to anybody. She used to be very, very timid and very, very, like, standoffish. She didn't want to come across as a freak or a weirdo or anything like that, but, like, once she was on the show, she was able to talk about it. She sees how, I mean, yeah, for example, you know this as well as anybody else does. Dennis and I, if we want to contradict or, you know, be a dick about religion, obviously there's so many avenues to do that. Mm-hmm. Not that we believe them, but if we did believe something different and we want to bring you on the show and challenge you and talk shit, yeah, it's real easy to do that.
Right.
But, no, that's not the venue that we create. It's love, happiness, kindness, you know, awesomeness, which you have all of those qualities.
Thank you. That's so sweet.
That wasn't a sugarcoating or brown-nosing thing. That's honestly, I, you know, every time I've hung out with you or talked to you, I love you, dude. Absolutely awesome. Like,
oh, thank you. I love everybody who comes to me. I can't help it. It's just what's inside me. So I just appreciate that.
because I love you too. You're awesome. When you showed up at Paracon, I was like, ah, Matt. And it was immediately, come sit by me. Come hang out. And once rescue me.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I did what I could, but no, and you know what? There was one thing we didn't get to touch on that I touched on in the pre-show for it before you called in was your religious tarot cards. I don't know if you've like been experimenting with those or anything since Fox Cities or.
I've been looking at them. Because I bought them that weekend. For me personally, not for others, because I'm on a show with my nephew before this one every Monday night, and he uses tarot cards, and that's great. I'm not a reader. I don't care for it. I can do it, but that's not me. I don't like using those things. But when I saw these, they were all the Virgin Mary. And I felt so much more comfortable with that. And I thought, you know what, even if just for the art, I'm going to buy these because I'll look at the paintings and these are classical Renaissance paintings and icons of the Blessed Mother and her life. So I thought, well, you know, no loss if I don't use them. So I tried them out. And the way I did it was I said a prayer to Mary as I shuffled them, and it was just, you know, a Marian prayer, but in my mind I was thinking, Holy Mother, please tell this person what they need to hear. And then I didn't do anything. I just said, well, let's do three cards. One ask the question, and one is the past, one is the present, one is the future. And then people were picking cards, and it was fucking mind-blowing how accurate these cards were. Now, part of the problem is they're very general, and so I'm always cautious about people who make, you know, general statements that are true of everybody. You're very reserved, but when you know someone well, you can be very open. Well, fuck yeah, that's everybody. Everybody has that. Well, sometimes you just feel like you don't belong. Duh, it's everybody. You know, so some of these things are very general, like family, hope, blessings. But they just kept falling into these really specific patterns. One gentleman asked about a question about his wife. But what he got was, I don't remember the past one, but it was mother, decision, action. All right? Those were the three cards. This guy, his mother was a sociopath, and he broke ties with her. He had recently been driving past her house and even parking there and watching through the window. I haven't spoken to her in 12 years. And he's been wanting to get back in touch with her. And he's been talking to his wife, and they've never come to a resolution. So you have mother. And I told him without knowing anything that it was the past and that the mother was the problem, that a decision needed to be made about her, and you have to take action before it's too late. And he was like, Jesus, he took a picture of the three cards and sent it to his wife. And he's like, this is freaking unbelievable. And that's what they were doing. And so I haven't had an opportunity to use them since because I don't do readings for money or anything. I haven't used them since. And they're really fascinating, too. So I have to mess with them some more.
Yeah, you kind of blew my mind. Like, you did two readings for me, which, all right, I'll dissect them for you. They were suggestive in the point of
like teetering on reality. It wasn't like it was a 100% like, oh my God, that was nailed dead accurate, like your dead grandmother Lorraine is standing next to you and she has glumpies for you. No, it wasn't like, you know, anything like that. It was suggestive in the point of accurate.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that there's only certain shit that you can pull out of it.
Right. And I'm not a practiced reader because I don't do them.
But I mean, even a practiced reader who I've talked to, who's, a few of them that are way worse than you, if that gives you any indication.
I'm not sure how to take that. They're way worse than you. Well,
no, meaning, I said a practiced reader who's way worse than her, meaning accuracy. Oh, wait, and yes.
Hey, Matt, I got a roll. I just heard a crash outside my house, brother.
What?
Did you hear me? I got a roll. I just heard a crash outside my house.
Oh, okay,
what the hell is wrong with you?
That was all fun. Yeah, I know. Get out of my way. All right, I got
to go. All right.
Okay, bye, Dennis.
Bye, sweetie.
Call me if you need me.
Okay,
yeah,
bye-bye.
Yeah, I will. Wait a minute.
Yeah, Dennis happens to have, like, rollover car accidents and horrible stuff happen around him all the time. Are you there? Thank you.